you really seem to be focused on caring for military personnel mentally, physically, and financially. What would you like to see done to make sure they are getting what they need?
Well, I think the big thing is, as we just saw in this year's conference report for the defense bill, I'd like to see any decisions that impact on our military people go through the full committee process from the Armed Services Committees, both in the House and the Senate, then onto the floor. This year it was very disturbing that the Pentagon proposed studying retirement with a committee, and then just simply having Beth an up or down vote like it was a base realignment and closure. And these things are just far too important and too impactful when you're talking about people and their health and their finances to do without going through the constitutional process. The committees that have been elected and appointed to make sure that we keep our nation strong. So use the system that's there. It served us very well for the last 11 years of war, where the Pentagon oftentimes, whether it was a Republican or Democratic administration, wanted to do something based on the short-term need, whether it was a budget need or not. Yet the Congress had a longer vision, a longer view, and they made some really excellent decisions on making sure that we could sustain the all-volunteer force.
Do you think there is one particular area right now that is being neglected and really needs to be expanded on, whether it be mental health care for returning soldiers or just somehow reworking the way they're receiving their benefits?
I don't think, I would use the word neglected on anything that, we have a shortcoming on. But certainly we had our Warrior Family Symposium in September at the Ronald Reagan Building. And Chairman Jeff Miller, who's the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, feels like we do have a crisis in access to mental health care workers for our military and their families. And we at MOAA agree with that. We know the president is working hard on that, signed out an executive order. Secretary Shinseki from the VA is working very, very hard to get mental health providers so that we can provide access. But this is something that's going to take the work of the government and public and private partnerships. And this is an area where I would agree with Chairman Miller that we have a crisis in access to folks that need help.
The second trend you bring up has a lot to do with how their care is financed through the military health care system. What action do you think that DOD should be thinking about with their health care system within the next couple of years?
The whole thing with health care is, as we've seen between repeated administrations, is that the Department of Defense and the administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat, tend to want to keep the same arcane military health care system that we have now that's very bureaucratic. And instead of making themselves more efficient and more effective, they just want to put more fees on the folks that have been serving this country. And so the Military Officers Association of America has been very insistent on proposing that the Defense Department fight medicine just like they do wars jointly. And right now they don't do that, Beth. The military healthcare system is rife with waste. They maintain three duplicative service health delivery systems and multiple major contracts, all of whom compete counterproductively for budget share. They need to get joint and much more effective and efficient before they ask people to pay more for their healthcare that are in the system. And we estimate there are billions that could be saved annually in simply delivering healthcare in a much more efficient and effective manner. So this is our number one objective, is get the Defense Department to really do due diligence. And we're hoping the 113th Congress will challenge the Defense Department to do this.
I'm speaking with Vice Admiral Nor Bryan. He is the president and CEO of the Military Officers Association of America. Are there any emerging technologies that you see that could maybe make it easier to care for soldiers, whether it be in the DOD system or within the Veterans Affairs system, or even just transferring the records between the two?
Well, the big thing is we have the whole challenge with the healthcare system between the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs is you have good people on both sides trying to do a great job, wonderful healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, technicians. But we're still dealing with the Stone Age as far as technology, in that we don't have the transferability of electronic records between systems. President Obama met with several of us, with the Secretary of VA and Secretary of Defense, a couple years ago, and said he knows this is tough, but he's committed to making it happen. We're hoping that the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs will step up the implementation of this unified medical health personnel record, so that when somebody checks into DOD, everything is automatically then transferred, whether they stay for 4 years in the Defense Department or 24 years as they become eligible for veterans benefits. Right now, we have some pilot programs going on, but I still don't think there's enough sense of urgency to get this done and get it done much quicker than it's programmed to be now.
Do you think maybe there should be more of an investment in other pilot programs?
Well, I think we need to step up the pilot programs and get serious about getting the entire system under this unified personnel medical record. This is the major problem that you read about every month, that the claims backlog. And I know the VA is working very, very hard to reduce this claims backlog, but when you're dealing with pieces of paper, it is just unmanageable. And so this is the number one thing that we need to do to get the claims backlog under control, to get a much more consistent delivery of health care to veterans and members of the service as they transfer from one system to the other. This is going to be fundamental to revitalizing the program.
Your final trend seems to be very forward-thinking, recruitment. Even though we are currently drawing down troops overseas, why do you think this should be a focus?
All we have to do is look at history, Beth. I mean, time and time again, we've looked for a peace dividend. We've ignored the readiness needs of the military. We've cut our forces too small, and then we get slammed, whether it was Korea or Vietnam or the Cold War. We've consistently ignored history. And when retention is going good like it is now, where the economy's poor, we just make these terrible assumptions that we can cut back on taking care of our people, that we can cut their pay and their benefits and neglect their families. And then when the economy comes back and we have a crisis, we find out that we're back in the hole again, and it ends up costing us lives and puts tremendous stress and strain in the force, as it has done for over the last decade since 9/11, where we were too small as we were going into Iraq. And now we've already declared victory, and many, many people are looking for a peace dividend without calling it that. So we have to be very, very careful. We recognize that we have to balance the force, the people, the weapon systems, the training. We support what the service chiefs want to do. We just want to make sure that there are no shortcuts in trying to take out all the people in 1 year rather than over the 5 or 6 years that it's programmed to be. You can't put these unbelievably dedicated and patriotic and competent people out in the street with the economy the way it is and expect things to go well. So we've got to be very, very careful about how we manage this drawdown and make sure that we understand the risks that we are taking as we go forward, and that we do it in a balanced and responsible manner.